I have a tissue issue.
A tissue issue. You know, that was one of our bad ideas a long time ago.
I think the we shared issue. It.
Did we share that?
I think so. That was the finding tissues in the scanning for tissues in your smart washing machine.
Yeah, it's a terrible name, but the idea is interesting. Because I think our devices are getting smarter. You know,
that's true.
And now with AI, I think you could probably do this pretty easily. Scan your clothes and find things in it that shouldn't be there, like tissues.
The amount of things that I don't need to have more technology put into it is insurmountable. Like, I don't need it. I'm sure other people can agree, and other people are like, you know what? No, embrace it. Like, technology and Wi-Fi and washers everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Total side tangent. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I think I would say I'm struggling with podcast scheduling.
Yes. We're doing our best.
We're doing our best.
We're actually recording this a couple weeks, I think, after
our original interview.
We had, for some transparency, we recorded a wonderful podcast, which we'll talk about in a moment.
So good.
And then completely forgot or ran out of time to record the intro that we usually do right here. And so then it got put to the wayside with all the projects that we had. So here we are. We're in a totally different location. We're That's wearing true. Different clothes. So That's the video is going to look really different. but I am still very delighted to
yes.
talk about this conversation that we had and get it out, because it was so good and so informative. And so let's get into it. So we sat down with Rachel Murray. She is the co-CEO of She Geeks Out, or She Plus Geeks Out, as you'll see it written in a lot of places. And she's been running the business for about 10 years now, a little over 10 years. They just celebrated 10 years last year in 2023, which is wonderful. And they are in the space of abolishing inequity in the workplace. So she does a lot of work on, like many CEOs, she's wearing many different hats, working on, you know, HR and tech and finance and operations and everything in between.
I think her title was Chief Everything Else Officer. It's pretty good. I love that.
It's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she does a lot of really incredible work, and is just the company is very mindful and very, like, we align with their values a lot in terms of how they're approaching things and thinking about the world and how to make better workplaces. And so without spoiling anything, I think we should just get right into it. But it was a delight to talk to her. We had a lot of fun. And I think we have taken away a lot from our conversation. So we hope you do too.
Yeah.
So let's jump into it.
Let's do it.
Rachel, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. We're so, so happy to talk to you. I think you and I have had many conversations over, gosh, the years, and just have dived a lot into different topics. So I want to make sure that we have time first for our audience who might not know who you are and what you do and what She Geeks Out is all about. Can you kind of give us a rough overview to start of, you know, how you got started and how She Geeks Out has been successfully doing amazing work for the last 10 years.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, thank you both for having me. It's a pleasure. Yeah, I'm happy to share. So yeah, I'm the co-founder and co-CEO of a company called She Geeks Out. And I also like to explain, you know, our name is pretty unique. So we actually started out as a women in tech group in the Boston area. And this was in 2013. We actually had our first event, so a little over a year ago, where my business partner and I, now business partner and I, that's how we met. And I kind of call myself the chief everything else officer a little bit. So I do a lot of different things. I either do, like, you know, tech, finance, HR, sales, marketing. That's me and my side, and my amazing business partner, Felicia. She runs all of the DEI training and consulting, because in 2017, we started adding the DEI training and consulting to our work. And for those who aren't familiar with the acronym, I don't want to presume, that means diversity, equity, and inclusion. where we teach about unconscious bias, microaggressions, allyship, identity, intersectionality, how that all shows up, particularly in the workplace. And so that's what my lovely business partner does. And so when we started out in 2013, we were really focused on events and we really shifted gears. Everything, as you, I'm sure, know, changed in 2020, actually, which was the year that we met.
Yes.
And so now the focus is really pretty much solely on the DEI training and consulting side of things. So that's a little bit about us.
Yeah.
Fully remote. It's a great time.
That's amazing. Yes, we are big proponents of the only remote lifestyle. As you can see, we're in New Mexico today. So it is wonderful. Well, Will, do you have a question? Because otherwise I'm going to jump right in. So
I'm trying to think of some of the work we've done in DEI before that has been either animation work. So let me just give you a little rundown of the background of the podcast. So the reason we run the podcast in the first place is to kind of try to teach people before they get to our doors what to do, what not to do, what to expect, that kind of thing. But it's also on the side of communication where we're talking about, you know, there's some topics, and yours is really particular, that lend themselves to animation and how that sort of communication, how we sort of work together. We've done a project for you in the past. We've done a couple other ones that maybe you haven't seen around DEI. And I kind of wanted to get a sense of, like, there's crucial communication happening between your organization. And do you have members, or is it just folks who sign up? Like, I want to kind of understand a little bit of, like, how it works. How do you get your work done?
It's like, paint us the Bob Ross picture right now.
Let me get those happy little trees, please, for you. Yeah, thank you for asking the question. So the way we typically work is primarily it's corporate clients. So they typically find us through our website and they reach out and they're interested in bringing us into their organization for training purposes. And before the pandemic, I would say about 90% of the training was probably in person. And I think that that has flipped since then. We're really fortunate in that a lot of people found us pretty early on in 2017. One of my prior life before SGO was in tech, so building websites. So it's great to be able to do that, to have that skill when you are a business. Yeah. And so we found that when we first launched our training, we wanted to be really intentional about making sure that we were providing thought leadership, that we were showing that we knew what we were talking about. And so we wrote a lot of articles. So I did a lot of the writing of the blog posts. Felicia, she's really the face. So this is a very odd experience, me being the face and the voice. But Felicia's typically the face and the voice. So she would go out and do the speaking engagements and I would be behind the screen doing a lot of the writing. And that's how a lot of people would find us. Thank goodness we're really good with search engine optimization. So that's a blessing. So we actually did attempt a few times to create community. We have had webinars that certainly bring people together, as well as sort of virtual meetups. We have our podcast that I think, you know, it's not really community, but it's certainly listeners. We have our newsletter where we have people experiencing us and that way. And it's wonderful when people reach out and respond. We did try a community last year, what is time? Really tricky to get people to talk about it, and happy to dive more into sort of my philosophy of sort of where the space is right now, because I think it's certainly evolving. But you didn't really sort of have a lot of conversation. So we're like, okay, we get it. People are tired. So now we have a new community actually that we just launched, which is really focused on online learning. So it's us really just providing resources to folks. So that's different ways that people can engage with us.
That's wonderful. I'm curious about, you have kind of a couple different audiences that I'm hearing here. And in each of those, I imagine that they have, especially with such a deep and purposeful subject like DEI, I'm curious about the communication challenges that happen there. Like, do you find that there's more resistance to teaching in some way or another, or where do you find sort of those communication successes that are like, this opens the door to a whole new realm that people are excited about? And then the opposite side of, like, we're trying to communicate, but also we can see the defensiveness or the freak out of, like, oh no, I don't know if we're ready to talk about this yet. Where do you find those challenges come in?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the way we like to approach the work is understanding that everybody's coming into this from different experiences, different lived experiences, different understandings. And so when we come into this space, we honor that. So understanding folks have deep lived experiences, other folks are maybe really curious about it. And then to be perfectly frank, there are going to be other people that are like, I don't know why I'm doing this. Why does this even matter? I just want to get my job done and like then go back and hang out with my kids, you know? So, and understanding that, I think, yeah, you do absolutely meet resistance. And there's a couple of ways that we talk about approaching this. First of all, being honest, right? This is this is the space that we're living in. Understanding for if it's, so if it's not a mandatory training, you'll usually get people who are curious and ready to go. For the trainings that maybe are mandatory, that's when you sort of meet, I think, a little bit more resistance. And when that happens, you know, we do use a couple of visuals around talking through some of this. So one is a visual that we use in the beginning of our workshops typically, which is if you can envision three circles, a small circle, which is your comfort zone, a larger circle, which is your learning zone, and then a larger circle, which is your panic zone. We talk through that and we say, folks, you know, if you stay in your comfort zone, you're not going to really learn anything. If you get in that panic zone, you're definitely not going to learn anything because your brain's going to shut down and not be interested. So we want to keep folks focused on that learning zone or that learning edge. So that's one way that we do it. And then, of course, as our facilitators go through the workshop, there are going to be moments of discomfort, which we also acknowledge up front that that can happen. And we do refer to the pause framework, which is what we actually worked with you on, as a way to address some of that resistance that can come up for really anyone, whether you're curious or not. You know, it's a tough subject.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
Do you feel like most of the people you're working with are like right on the edge of that panic zone? Because I feel like everyone's anxiety is like turned up to 20 right now.
What are you talking about, Will? There's no mental health crisis in this country.
No, never heard of it.
Yeah. You know, I think that it is really, it is a challenge. I think that there are a lot of people who are struggling with it. And I think workplace dynamics in general, outside of DEI, I think are just, they're in a new, we're just entering this completely new phase. I think COVID set it off. It's probably been boiling under the surface for a while, but it's all sort of coming out and coming to a head where there is just a lot of lack of trust and a lot of, you know, sort of this understanding of, you know, I think for a lot of employees, it used to be, oh, we're really committed to this company. We're really invested. We believe in what we're doing, what we're building, to this sort of shift of, you know, sort of goods for services now. And I think what that does is it creates, when we are going in and having these workshops and having these discussions, I think that can bubble up. And I think it does maybe, you know, our facilitators are incredibly skilled and I am not a facilitator. So I just give them so much credit for the beautiful work that they do in really managing that line to really help people stay in that learning zone as much as possible and not be in that panic zone. And if they are, do the very best to find a way to regulate so they can come back.
Yeah. No, that's a great point.
The reason I bring it up, I mean, yeah, obviously because the world is crazy. But I do find that sometimes with a new kind of tool, communication tool, medium, something that you've never really done before, we come across that a lot in animation when we're talking to folks like you who kind of, you know, might be afraid of something or don't know if it's actually going to work or something like that. They also tend to be like on the edge of that panic. So I just want to just like, okay, how do you bring them back? How do you reel them down from like, this is not going to work?
Right. It's building trust and community and, oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I agree with you, Catherine. That was perfect. I think that's absolutely right. Building trust, showing data, I think also helps a lot. And I know that that's probably something that you both do as well is, you know, proving the value, you know, why are people nervous to spend their time and money on a lot of things. And so how do you show that it's valuable and how do you trust that that is going to be a, not only a good product that you're creating, but also a good working relationship, which I don't think gets valued enough. Right. And that's one of the things that I love about you is that it's always been a pleasure working with you. So
Yeah, we've always talked about this idea of like wanting to build partnerships and relationships that never feel like just transactional.
Yes.
Right? Because there's so much of that in the world that we do on a day-to-day basis. You know, I'm sure hundreds of thousands of people are shopping on Amazon right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there's something so much more purposeful and meaningful. And like, so people who are excited to embrace that idea is like, we're all for. Yeah. We're like, yes, let's get into the weeds of this because it's a beautiful thing. I'm curious because you kind of touched on this idea of, you know, in a lot of the work that you're doing, you're kind of in this like mixed tool set in terms of communication, of trying to get different ideas across, trying to your point, have like visual references that are almost like you're sort of like a guiding light for everyone to be like, this is, you know, you can always refer back to this in some way. So I'm kind of curious, how do you even decide which tool to use in certain moments? And even the idea of like when you were at the time deciding to use animation, like how did those come about? Like what, how do you make those choices, especially for a topic like this?
That's such a great question. And I will defer to my facilitation team to get into the specifics about communication in those workshops, which is, you know, I think I will just say one thing is different learning styles is of course a key component to understanding how to communicate because everyone does have different ways of processing, as you both obviously know. Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect that I'll sort of put over here because it's not my area of expertise. But I can share a little bit about sort of the broader audience. So, you know, we do a lot in communicating via a lot of different media. So whether that is, we have a podcast as well. So there's the audio, there is our blog posts. So we want to make sure that we have a lot of written content. We also use YouTube we have quick little Ask SGO videos to get information out. We have long form courses. How we make those choices, it really depends on what we're trying to deliver. So long form versus short form content right there is, you know, okay, how are you going to decide what to do? Understanding that there are going to be people who are going to want that information differently. With DEI in particular, it's certainly not impossible, but it is certainly more challenging to create short form content communication because a lot of the learnings are complicated or they just require, they're just more nuanced. So a lot of times they require a little bit more exposition than a lot of what today's media really loves. When we got to deciding about the creating an animation for the pause framework, so our director of training, Fatima Denke, who is absolutely incredible, she developed this framework, which is pause, which is P-A-U-S-E. I'm happy to explain what each of them means if that's of interest. But essentially, it's a way for folks, it's a framework for folks to literally pause and take a minute when they are in moments that feel particularly fraught or stressful that are around these topics of DEI. Sure, we could have had it all written down. We do. We have it in a, you know, text. That's fine. We could also have had a talking head. We could have had Fatima just video say what they mean. But with these concepts, we really wanted to push it a little bit because we wanted it to tell a story. And this is where I find where animation comes in so handy. And it's just done so beautifully is that it can just take the viewer deeper, I think, into the understanding of what the information is that's trying to be delivered. So that was how we decided to do the pause framework as an animation.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Can I ask an offshoot question there?
Love it.
Do you ever, like, how many metaphors are in there? Like, we've done a DEI sort of training thing for someone else, and it was in the workplace. And a lot of the themes that we kept hearing in the conversation was, we don't want to show people. We don't want to show, like, we don't want to make it super personal because, you know, everyone's going to look at it differently. So how can we show this, like, DEI thing differently? And our solution to that was making them pens and pencils. So we were kind of talking about like different writing styles in a way. Like, there are different ways to, you know, approach that. So do you
find yourself using metaphors more and more in these trainings, or is that not something that happens?
Or do you get right into it? Yeah, you're right. Like, nope, this, you, like, because I feel like on the flip side of that, like there's times where it probably calls for being super direct and literal,
right,
just because of the subject matter. So I'm imagining there's probably like a place and time for each of those things.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say it is true. If we are talking about something that is something particularly tied to an identity, we would want to be specific about that, I think. But, you know, when we do use imagery, illustrations, you know, they can be of people. That's, it's usually like nondescript. One of my favorite illustrations is actually a graphic where it describes the difference between equity and equality. Mm. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's not the one with the baseball field. That's not a good one to use. Don't use that one for the listeners. Noted. Don't use that one. It's not a good one. But the one that I love is, if you can imagine at the top, there's basically two panels. The top panel is showing what equality looks like. And it has a bicycle. Everyone's on a bicycle, but there's a tall man, there's a woman, there's someone with a disability, there is, I think, a child, and they all have this same adult bike. So that's equality. Everyone's been given that bike. Then on the bottom is equity. So equity is the same people, but everyone is given a bike that suits their needs. So the child has a smaller bike. The really tall person has a bigger bike. The disabled person has a recumbent bike. And so they all, so that's really what equity is. And I find that visual to be so powerful that when, as soon as someone sees it, if they had any sort of questions around the difference between the two, it instantly clears it up. Because it's like, ah, okay, I get it. That is what equity is. And then you, and then it translates into everything that we think about in the world, whether that's in the workplace or in literally, you know, on the streets and in our world. So I think it's a really powerful image.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, well, also you're very good at just like describing the visual as well.
Oh, good.
Which is also, which is also, I think, a key component now, like especially nowadays in being mindful of accessibility and trying to use descriptors, and like words are just as important as visuals, and finding the, you know, the balance between the two is a beautiful thing when it can, when you can nail it.
That's a great point. And I would imagine that that's harder with animation. In the work that you do, right? It's easy to describe a picture, but you saw how long it took me to describe a picture. Imagine an animation.
That's, it's always one of the interesting things we find is that whenever we're working with like a script and someone comes to us, they say, this is the idea we have, this is the script we've written. A lot of times our job is to kind of read through the words really deliberately to say, you know, a lot of this section that you're going for here, I totally understand why you want to say it that way, but you can just show it in a visual. And then you've eliminated like some of the language in the script, or you've shortened the video in some way, or like, and sometimes it's a mix of both. Sometimes we'll take, you know, written words and say, okay, well, this is so important, we need to emphasize it again through text on screen. Like, so that you hear and visually see, because I think in a lot of times you might come across this as well, where you're finding a balance in like the webinars and trainings that you're doing, the balance between showing visuals and lots of text while somebody's talking and making sure that like no one's spending too much time reading the text and not hearing what you have to say. So I imagine you're experiencing that as well.
Exactly. I mean, that's a huge, huge thing. I mean, one thing that we talk a lot about when facilitating really anything, but certainly this work, is it's really important to make sure that you're not just, you know, a body that's reading off of a slide, like, oh my gosh, like, not interested, right? Like, so you want to keep it engaging. You want to use different tools. You want to have different visuals and videos to keep folks, especially in the virtual world, where if you're doing a virtual session, I mean, my goodness, we're competing with the world's knowledge and information and inboxes. And so, yeah, we get it. We got to keep them entertained.
Yes. You know, that's fun, 'cause I was going to ask you this sort of like side question, but it's like, how do you make DEI feel fun to learn?
Do you put it? I know. Go I ahead. Have one. You put it in the metaverse.
Of course.
The training you take through the metaverse.
You're all in VR headsets in a virtual office, and so authentic. You know.
You know. It's funny. You're laughing, but there's probably several companies I know of, at least one that, and I will say. Yeah. Back in, I think I was like 2019, I actually turned to Felicia and I was like, should we get into VR? Like, I feel like this could be a thing, because if you want to get that simulated experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's one of the things about how to keep folks engaged. Honestly, it's making it as relevant to the work that what they are experiencing as possible. So one thing that's important for us is making sure that we're not doing anything cookie cutter. So when we deliver a workshop, there's always going to be some element that's going to be relevant. So we're industry agnostic. So what that means is we have a conversation with the companies that we work with, and then we learn about sort of what their needs are. We learn a little bit about their industry. Sometimes, so one client we had a while ago is Central Park Conservancy. We had never worked with a public parks system, but they had unique challenges, right? I mean, in DEI, and it was really important for us to make sure that we were creating scenarios that were specific to the parks. And they appreciated that. And that's how they say, I think, I don't know about fun, maybe fun, certainly engaged.
Engaging.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think fun is such an interesting word, because right? Like, how do you keep it fun? I don't know that that's a realistic goal, but I do think
that's probably
keeping engaged is definitely no, but it's a solid question though. And I'm like, how do we keep it fun?
Well, it does, going back to this, circling a little back to this VR thing, there was a project we did once that was like a training video for like workplace safety in a warehouse. And it was all through VR, so that you were actually, that way they could recreate the environment with animation. So they could say like, oh, somebody's about to get hit by a forklift. What do you do in this moment?
Exactly.
And so you could feel like you were there. So it's so interesting that like sometimes we'll laugh about it, but there are like very real practical applications of every medium that you can, as long as you know how to tap into each one of them, that it like, it just allows you to do so much more than we might have thought otherwise. Yeah.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
You talked about long form and short form content. And I guess I want to get a little bit of your strategy in here, just so that understand, like, who are you like shooting short form content to versus long form content? Mm-hmm. Is it someone who maybe perhaps doesn't care as much, or is maybe a little bit more removed? You give them the short form content? Because like, I'm thinking of like a DEI funnel. In a way, like, you know, a marketing funnel where like at the very top, you have folks who like don't know anything about it. And maybe a short form thing makes a little bit more sense. And as soon as you go sort of down that funnel, you might get more into the longer form content. So I'm curious as to, is that what you're doing? Or is that a different?
No, I mean, you nailed it. So that's absolutely one aspect of it for sure, is getting folks that maybe are curious, but you know, it's not a priority, that they can sort of get into that. And then it's possible they want to go in deeper. We, you know, our name is She Geeks Out. We talk about geeking out about things. Like, so we say, if you want to geek out about stuff, we've got you covered. We've got a lot of stuff for you. And then I think there are just folks that learn differently. So that's the other reason, is there are, or not even learn differently, but just literally don't have the time. So they may be super curious, but they may have so many things that are going on. They just need something that is going to give them some information that they're looking. So the Ask SGO, the purpose of it is that there's, you know, we have like sort of a frequently asked questions. We have people sort of asking the same questions over and over again. We want to just answer it in video format. Great. That's wonderful. We get it. Mm-hmm. But there are other folks that, so long, I consider the podcast, right, as a long form content. And so there are people that don't want to be in front of their screens anymore. Wonderful. Take us with you.
Right.
You bring your buds and we'll travel with you, and while you're on your walk and getting fresh air, and then that works out. So it's really meant for having people who have just different needs, and then how we choose the content is really based on what's feasible, what are the things that we can actually provide that are in smaller bits versus the longer.
Yeah, it feels like what I feel like I'm hearing there is there's this idea of in your marketing strategies and even in just the work that you do, there's a lot of like meeting people where they're at so that you can then adapt to their needs. And then they feel when you show them this kind of level of like respect of like, okay, we understand where you are and we're happy to work with you to get to this other place. Like that's so much more inviting and warm and like, you know, purposeful than just saying like, oh, you might need this 40 years from now. Like, it's like, if you don't need it right now, it's okay. If you do need it here, we got you. Like there's just something about that I think is really wonderful to see. So I applaud you for doing that work. Cause I think sometimes it can seem like more work on the side of like the communication side to like, be like, we've had discussions with different companies over the years that are like, oh, do we really need to put in all these closed captioning and all this here? And like, do you know, take our blog and make it short form over here? It's like, yeah. It's important work. It makes a big difference. So I think it's just a testament to the work that you're doing.
Well, I love this. Thank you so much. I'll take in all of those wonderful compliments.
always.
Are you familiar with the platinum rule versus the golden rule?
No.
So it's one of my.
I'm ready to learn.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things, and I think about it a lot. And I think it's related to what you said. So the golden rule is, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. The platinum rule is treat people how they want to be treated. Mm. And when I started out as a people manager many, many moons ago, I was terrible at it. Absolute garbage. You know, partly my fault. Partly the fault of the company that for not giving me any training, which is very true at a lot of places. Mm-hmm. But as I've evolved and learned more, the platinum rule has always stuck with me. And I think about that with regard to everything that I do is do your best to be empathetic to what is happening on the other side of the screen or the desk or the table or wherever you are, because you have no idea what stories are happening, what is going on with that other person. All you can do is lead with empathy and try to recognize where that person's coming from and provide information and be as helpful as you can. If we all did that, we'd probably have world peace.
Oh, nice. That would be lovely. Wouldn't we all love that? Yes. Yeah, I think this touches a little bit on a question I have because you're kind of tapping into it already, but you know, in this idea of doing communications work, trying to get your message out there, what advice might you give to other organizations who are looking to do like kind of any, you know, marketing communication efforts, but even within animation, like where would you recommend how they think about it or how they approach it? If it's something they've never done before, what advice might you have? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm going to say anything that's particularly brilliant here or surprising.
You just blew me away with the plot.
I know. I did it. That was it.
Yes.
We're done. Interview over.
Oh, right. They're like, what is it? Like a one hit wonder.
Exactly. I did it. We're done. Go out on top. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of practical advice that I think we're all pretty familiar with, which is, you know, just be really intentional, really understand why you're doing what you're doing. I just think that we can kind of get shiny ball syndrome and be like, oh, I want to do this thing. It looks really cool, whether it's VR or animation or whatever it is. But be really clear. And also think about the longevity, because I think when you're investing in something like animation, it is a little different than when you're, you know, writing a blog post where you can just like change up the words if you needed to, right? Or the link. When you're committing to animation, it's something that, you know, ideally you're going to want it to last for a while, and think about what its applications are and why you're doing it, and ideally partner with some really smart folks that I happen to be talking with. But I think that intentionality piece, we talk a lot, I think, in business about like, what are your goals? And sometimes it can sound nebulous, but I think if you can really ground it in practical terms, really, what is your goal for this form of communication? Why are you doing, if your instinct first is, I want to do an animation, but I'm not sure what I want to do it on. Ask yourself why. What is it? What is it that you're trying to achieve here? And then sort of try to work the other way around. Like I said, nothing sort of like mind blowing, but
Yeah, crucial.
Yeah.
No, these are things that we need reminders of too. I think a lot of times it's especially in the day and age of like feeling like the need to just pump out content as much as possible is like there's that I feel like we go into that panic zone of like, how are we going to put out all this content? Okay, let's throw this here. Let's throw this here. Like without that time and care and that pause to think about, is this the right decision? Like I applaud you for like just everything that you're doing. Cause I think that there's something really important about needing and honoring the time it takes to do this type of work. Oh,
thank you. It's great. You know, I feel very fortunate to not only do this work, but also the fact that we do, I personally love being able to work in different media and different forms of communication because I get bored really easily. So, so it's really nice to be able to do different things and to challenge myself in different ways and have our team just sort of grow in all these ways as well.
So I want to just quickly circle back to the, I know that's a business term. I
love it.
I sigh every time I say it, but it's.
No, let's get some synergies going. I'm ready.
Yes. So I want to just acknowledge earlier you mentioned too that you could kind of touch on sort of where the DEI space is right now.
And
So I want to just leave space for that because I think that that's important for people to hear because we've had conversations over the years with different folks in many, I guess, other industries as well, but mostly in the animation space. And we're asking questions like, when budget cuts happen, how do you make sure that DEI is not cut from that budget? Like, so those, I'm kind of curious where in our current moment in time you're seeing the space overall.
Yeah, it has been a wild ride. So, you know, back in 2017, when we started this work, I like to call it like it was the Wild West. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not that this work hadn't been being done and called something else, multicultural work, whatever, for decades, but it was all kind of the Wild West, you know, no real formal education around it, nothing, you know, really specific. And that was evolving and there were more programs, more certificates, more master's programs. You're seeing more of that, you know, those concentrations. And then in 2020 with the murder of George Floyd and so many others, what we found was there was a gold rush and it went from, you know, a lot of really dedicated people doing it to a lot of folks who maybe saw financial opportunities and ran with that in a variety of different ways. And then in, I would say over the past year or so, there was a downslide. Not only was the market sort of saturated, but there was fatigue, diversity fatigue. And I think that that still exists. And it has been compounded with all of the news in the world that's happening, whether it's, I'll just pick two big items of, you know, climate change and Dobbs,
right.
I think that are both, I think, related to the work that we do and critically important. So there's fatigue. Meanwhile, there are so many crises. I'm not even going to talk about the politics right now. Mm-hmm. There are so many crises that are happening that I think the workplace is evolving. I think with also the advent of remote work because of COVID and that shift happening. And then I think there is an awakening where folks are realizing that companies aren't necessarily going to care as much about their employees as they maybe said that they did in 2020, 2021.
Right.
And that's been proven out with layoffs and with cuts on benefits, with sort of heartless acts, I think.
Yes. Yeah, we've seen this very greatly recently on the animation side. I think it was something like 16,000 jobs have been cut over the last year or so. So yeah, totally understand where you're coming from.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So if you think about it, it behooves companies to continue to do this work because employees are caring less and less about companies. So I think we're in this really interesting time where I think not only are we seeing companies sort of scale back their efforts around DEI, not all of them, mind you, there are definitely still companies that are totally committed to it because they get it and they know that it's important.
Yeah.
And I think you also have the compounded factor of employees caring less about the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would they care about the workplace when they're focused on, they got to focus on their home and their family, because that's the stuff that matters. And it ends up becoming, it's more of a transactional relationship, I think, within companies now. So I think there's going to be some sort of a reckoning. And I think that's what we're sort of facing now, is employers and employees needing to find a way to trust each other again, which has been broken.
Yeah.
And then I think that there's a possibility that DEI, in whatever format, whether it's its current iteration or it evolves to something else, I think that will still need to happen, because, you know, until the robots take over, we got humans. So.
Yes. No, it's a great point, because I think that's also true to, like, a lot of what you were saying in terms of what's been happening is sort of parallel on our side with, like, what's happening with AI and, like, everything's evolving. So it is interesting to kind of see everything that's happening, especially as owners, and trying to understand, okay, how do we as one company navigate this very big landscape? So I appreciate the transparency that you're sharing, because I think there's a lot there that I think is helpful for people to see that that you're very conscious of, and it's not just a, going back to that idea of, like, DEI is not a transaction. It's a change in the way that companies have been run for a long time. And that can be very panic zone-y, but
panic zone-y.
Yeah. Yes. That's my new term now.
Like, I love it. Yeah. Well, and if you think about it, I mean, companies have been making millions and millions and millions of dollars with still primarily white men in charge of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's this sort of short-term view of, like, well, it's just going to be this way. And we're like, well, the demographics are shifting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think Mark Cuban, I don't know if you saw any of the debate between Mark Cuban and Elon Musk.
Mm.
No. Elon is not one of my favorite people. I'm just going to, you know, put it out there. I feel very comfortable saying that, because I think I'm pretty small potatoes. I don't think he's going to come after me.
I'm right there with you.
So, but he sort of, he said DEI must DIE, right?
Mm.
Lovely, pithy little annoying statement. And Mark Cuban, who, for those of you who may not know him, who's, you know, he's a Shark Tank entrepreneur, millionaire, Dallas Mavericks owner, blah, blah, blah.
He just sold it, right?
Yeah. 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 It was a great interview with him. I highly recommend the Trevor Noah podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very good.
Definitely.
What Now?
Yeah. What Now? Exactly. It's great. Mm-hmm. And he was on there, and they were talking about DEI and the future of DEI, because he basically was like, Elon, you're an idiot, because the future is DEI.
And
this is the world that we live in. And, like, generations after us are like, what are you even talking? Why would there be these crazy power dynamics that don't make any sense? Like, we need to get it together. So,
Interesting.
Can I ask you one last question? And it's a big one. And
we
can cut it if I'm seeing a lot of parallels between how you describe how DEI training started and, like, how animation is currently. Like, there is this, like, old way of doing it that, like, Disney built, but then all these, like, new tools started to come up and different ways of working started to become available and more accessible to people like us and other folks who are running maybe their own smaller shops. And there seems to be, as time goes on, these, like, new tools that keep popping up. And I'm making, and maybe this is not true, but I'm making a connection to, like, DEI's, like, core things. Are they changing as time goes on? Because, like, the way we work and the tools that we use are changing. They're changing internally as, like, standalone tools, but also other new tools are coming in and changing the way we work. AI, for example. So is that happening at, like, a sort of a more conversational level with DEI, where, like, something is, you know, something's the norm, this is how we talk about DEI, and then some other new thing pops up and then you have to, like, adjust your whole training set?
So, okay.
Oh, okay.
DEI is ever evolving.
Got it.
As humans evolve, as generations evolve. I'll give you one example is like, so She Geeks Out, right? Is women in tech. And then we learn more about gender fluidity. And we're like, well, how do we bring in folks that are non-binary, that are trans women, that, you know, we want to make sure that we're being inclusive. And we really struggled with it. And so we decided to add a plus after she to that's why we did that, was to sort of to bring that in together. And I will give credit to Molly Walters in a conversation, in case she is listening or watching this. She and I had a conversation in front of a, I think it was like a Lesbians Who Tech conference. We had a conversation and she was like, why don't you add a plus? And I was like, that's a brilliant idea. So I give her credit for that. And to follow that, and that has been great. We still have that. To follow that, we for a little while there decided to get rid of the E in women and woman and put an X there instead. And when we did that, we learned that we were actually alienating some other folks who were really trans women who were like, no, I'm actually, I want the A. Like, I am a woman. Like, and I don't want to change that. Don't change that to make it not that. So that's an example. So and it's really individual, right? Because you'll have a group of folks that feel that way, and then you'll have another group that feels this way. So you try to understand that and provide context, even using gender pronouns on the regular. There are folks that they're like, I will never forget. I had a conversation with a woman who said, you know, I have been fighting all my life to be in leadership and not have it be about my gender and just respect me for like being a person doing this work. And now you're asking me to like constantly refer to my gender, and I don't want to do that. So it's always nuanced. Yeah, it's always nuanced. It's always complex, and it is absolutely evolving all of the time. Those are just like a few examples. I have like 30 more, but
no, that's great.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. But yeah, I think we're trying to be mindful of your time as well, because I feel like we could probably go for hours.
Oh, you're
like,
so sweet.
We probably have a lot to talk about with Elon Musk, but that'll be another podcast for another day. But yes, so in the midst of things, if people are wanting to learn more about She Geeks Out and where to go, and they're saying, you know what, I need to get in on the CEI training, or I need to be a part of a community, where can they go? How can they either follow you or contact you or anything of that nature that you're comfortable with?
Oh, thank you for asking. Definitely shegeeksout.com is the number one best place, and there's offshoots from there. We have sgolearning.com, which is our online asynchronous learning platform. You can find me. My name is incredibly generic, so you have to like Google Rachel Murray She Geeks Out really to find me, but I'm on LinkedIn, and we're also on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, and the pods. So
awesome.
Yeah.
What's the podcast called?
The She Geeks Out podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Love it. Best branding.
That's pretty clear.
That's all you need. That's all you need. That's amazing. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time today for this wonderful conversation. I felt like it was it's very organic every time we talk to you. There's just like, we have a flow that I'm just like, oh yeah, let's talk about this. Okay, let's go on that. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing.
I love it. I had a great time.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode was brought to you by E! Media. Our producer is Jackson Foote. Our music was created by Hidden and licensed through premiumbeat.com. And until next time,
stay honest.
Stay creative.
Stay open.
Open Pixel Studios, we will see you in the next episode.
Bye.